Did you hear that? Baby don't care for shows. Baby don't care for clothes. Baby just cares for me. My baby don't care for furs and laces. Baby don't care for all those high-toned places. Baby don't care for rings or other expensive things. She's as sensible as can be. Baby don't care, who knows it? Baby just cares for me.
As we've been talking about, one of the most famous and popular entertainers of the 20th century, Frank Sinatra left an enduring legacy that is still treasured by legions of fans today. Well, now on this 100th anniversary of the singer's birthday, the acclaimed poet and critic David Lehman offers a fresh new take in his book Sinatra's Century, 100 Notes on the Man and His World. It is a warmly celebratory collection of 100 short reflections on the man, his music, and his larger-than-life story. And it's a great pleasure to welcome David Lehman to the roundtable this morning. David, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you with us. How did you come to this idea of wanting to put together these notes?
Well, I've been a lifelong fan of Frank Sinatra. In fact, in the 1960s, while my contemporaries were listening to the Beatles, Rolling Stones, and Bob Dylan, and I liked and listened to those groups and singers as well, but my heart was with Frank Sinatra even then, and so it was a kind of labor of love, and it occurred to me that a way to celebrate the 100th birthday of my favorite singer would be to write a book in 100 parts, one for each year, but it would also be formally a way for me to mix it up so that I could have some present tense and some second person point of view, and there's one even in the form of a multiple choice, and there's one devoted to a quotation. So formally, as a poet, I was very attracted to this idea of the century as a way of organizing the thoughts about Frank, and also that it's Sinatra's century. I mean, he was a figure that represents the cultural trends of the 20th century par excellence. So that's another meaning of the word century in my title, Sinatra's Century. And you put this all together, a singer whose work I listen to every day, the subject of his life as well as his music and the times he lived in, and a kind of formal problem, which for a poet is very inspiring to solve. Well, there you have it.
You, of course, are the founder and longtime editor of the Best American Poetry series, as well as the editor of the Oxford Book of American Poetry. Do you think, being a poet in your day job, that you listen to this music in a different way?
Well, perhaps. I know that the way the songs hit me first is the way they hit everybody, that you have this superb voice with this tremendous talent at phrasing, and a tremendously gifted musical ear who can make a song sound like a chapter of his own autobiography, who can make a song of passion sound totally sincere, so that every girl in the 1940s sitting at the Paramount thought he was singing to her, and I dare say everyone today thinks he is singing either to us or for us, for the city of New York when he sings New York, New York, or my kind of town for the city of Chicago. But
this is my kind of town. Chicago is my kind of town Chicago is. My kind of people too, people who smile at you. And each time I roam, Chicago is calling me home. Chicago is why I just grin like a clown. It's my kind of town.
Yes, I am a poet, and I like to listen to the lyrics, which are a great art form. I mean, what Ira Gershwin did with lyrics, what Cole Porter did, what Lawrence Hart did, Johnny Mercer, Irving Berlin, Sammy Kahn, these are greatly gifted guys. And what they did was very, very difficult. And I love the rhymes they come up with, the puns, the use of foreign words in a strategic place. It's poetry. It's a form of poetry. It's a different form. Oscar Hammerstein's idea of a song lyric is different from a poem by Randall Jarrell, and they both have their place. And it wouldn't be fair to compare them, but the Oscar Hammerstein lyric is very well worth attending to. It brings an amazing amount of skill to it. So when you hear Sinatra do the song from Carousel called Soliloquy, you have the benefit of Richard Rodgers' music, Oscar Hammerstein's lyrics, Frank Sinatra's voice, and the best musicians in the world, because that's what he insisted on. So that is a hard-to-resist package.
I don't give a damn what he does, as long as he does what he likes. He can sit on his tail or work on a rail with a hammer and hammering spikes. He can ferry a boat on a river, or pedal a pack on his back, or work up and down the streets of a town with a whip and a horse and a hack. He can haul a scow along a canal, run a cow around a corral, or maybe bark for a carousel. Of course it takes talent to do that well. He might be champ of the heavyweights, or a fella that sells you glue, or president of the United States. That'd be all right.
And you talk about the importance of the arrangers, too, of Nelson Riddle and Billy May and Victor Young, Elmer Bernstein. I mean, the importance of his arrangers.
I think you can't underestimate it. Nelson Riddle arrangements are probably the most celebrated. They began when Sinatra went from Columbia Records to Capitol Records in 1953. And Riddle, who was a trombonist in the Tommy Dorsey Band, turned out to be a magnificent arranger. What does that mean? Well, it means that you've got the tune, the melody, and you have the left hand on the piano, but you don't have the music for all the supporting instruments, and Riddle could do that. He could figure out, well, you could use a little muted saxophone here in the last four bars, or it would be nice to have a piano accompaniment just before the bridge. And he would write these charts, as he would write for all the different musicians supporting the Sinatra song. And so you have the benefit of this really interesting use of woodwinds, for example. That's just Nelson Riddle. Billy May is another very good arranger. He was very brass-heavy. So was Quentin Jones with the Count Basie Band. And the brassy sound really suits Sinatra when he sings "The Best Is Yet to Come," or
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars, let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby,
kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Had the benefit of a good dozen great arrangers.
I find the book interesting because there are moments where you bring us to very specific dates and very specific years and tell us stories of what was happening. But you also look at more recent things and show how, even with him gone, how he affects our society, and there is such an impact. Something as simple as his license going on the auction block for nearly $16,000.
Well, you're right. Sinatra has endured. It's sort of reciprocal. He has extended the life of the great jazz standards of the first 65 years of the 20th century just by recording the songs of the Gershwins and Cole Porter and Jerome Kern and so on. But he has endured as a name, a brand, a personality, a figure, well into our century. So you see the use of Sinatra songs in television commercials, or in spots on popular television shows like The Sopranos. I just saw a commercial this morning for a health services package, some sort of medical insurance that bills itself as giving you the big three, and they have people say, what are the big three? And one of the first persons to come say, oh, it's Frank, Dean, and Sammy. And I thought it was very interesting that it's assumed that you, a person of a certain age in the market for health insurance, would instantly know who Frank, Dean, and Sammy were. So he has achieved a certain kind of fame that's very impressive. I wonder how many people today know Bing Crosby. I mean, they should. He's a great, great singer. How many people know Ella Fitzgerald? I think these are really important people, and we should honor them and listen to them. And Sinatra's sort of at the head of the pack, which I guess is where exactly he'd like to be. There are stories that break about him all the time. It's quite fascinating.
I want to conclude with a part of the book where you talk about, you give a lengthy list of songs that Sinatra sang in the 40s, and you say that it's an overlooked decade in Frank Sinatra's career. And you give a lengthy list of beautiful songs, 20 to be exact, that could make for a very good playlist.
Well, that was a lot of fun to do because I love the music of the 1940s when Frank sang first with the Harry James Band, then with the Tommy Dorsey Band. Then he went on his own with Axel Stordahl as his arranger and with Columbia Records as his company, and the songs that he recorded then, or that he performed at nightclubs, like the coffee song that Bob Hilliard wrote.
You date a girl and find out later she smells just like a percolator. Her perfume was made right on the grill. Why, they could percolate the ocean in Brazil.
Or Jerome Kern's They Didn't Believe Me, or Body and Soul, or The Song Is You, or some of the songs in Porgy and Bess.
Summertime, and the living is easy. Fish are jumping,
They're very beautiful. He has a very pure voice. He's very boyish of sound. The voice is capable of an incredible range, especially comfortable with the very high end of the scale, whereas Crosby is really good at the low end, which made them perfect partners harmonically, and their duets are really swell.
If you're looking for action, he'll furnish the spot. Even when the heat is on, it's never too hot. Not for good old reliable Nathan, for it's always just a short walk to the oldest established permanent floating craft game in New York.
I think that the 40s Sinatra is tremendous. I mean, the most famous songs of Frank's career are from 1953 to 1970, first the Capitol years, then when he had his own record company, Reprise, in the 60s. And those are the songs we're more likely to associate with him: Young at Heart, Witchcraft, Come Fly with Me, All the Way, My Way, That's Life, and Call Me Irresponsible, and so on. And those are magnificent, and one would not want to do without them. But I'm telling people that you should get the Columbia Years records, too, because you'll be surprised. And when he does a duet with Doris Day, Let's Take an Old-Fashioned Walk, I think it's sublime.
Let's take an old-fashioned walk.
I'm just bursting with talk.
What a tale could be told
if we went for an old-fashioned walk.
She's very underrated. Or with Dinah Shore when he does My Romance.
My romance doesn't need a castle rising in Spain.
Dance to a constantly surprising refrain.
Wide awake, I can make my most fantastic dreams come true.
Tremendous. He does the great Bye Bye Baby from Leo Robbins' lyrics from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Bye Bye Baby, remember you're my baby. When they give you the eye, although I know that you care, won't you write and declare that though on the loose, you are still on the square.
You should listen to that and then hear Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell do it in the movie version. That's a real treat. It's a great song and great performers.
Two things I like about the book. One is that you don't mind getting gossipy. Right, you get gossipy in the book. You talk about his relationship with Peggy Lee. You don't shy away from things like that, and then there's also the point in the book where you talk about how, well, so many of singers and actors and celebrities of that era were accused by their children years later of being awful parents. That is certainly not the case with Frank Sinatra.
He's very lucky in that regard. His three children are incredibly loyal to him. They obviously love him. I mean, you can't fake it. And they've done very well by him. They, as sort of caretakers of his estate. I was very moved on Father's Day a couple of years ago. Tina Sinatra, the youngest of the three children, hosted a program on the radio with the daughters of Dean Martin, Mel Torme, Nat King Cole, and Henry Mancini. So evidently those were four daughters were also very fond of their dads, and it was just a great program. But yes, we're familiar with all these books about what a terrible mother a certain actress was, or what a mean dad a certain crooner was. But Frank was loved by the people around him, and they were incredibly loyal to him. He's a very complicated fellow. I mean, he's capable of very vile behavior and had a terrible temper and was, in his own words, an 18-carat manic depressive. But he was also capable of tremendous acts of generosity and courage and assertiveness, and had real ideals and idealism and a love of America. He never ceases to fascinate me because of all the aspects of his personality. And I'm really glad to hear that you liked my book. And sure, I don't shy away from gossip. I'm an intellectual. We all love gossip.
David Lehman's new book is Sinatra's Century, 100 Notes on the Man and His World. It is published by Harper. David, thank you very much for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. I could have talked for another hour at least about this subject and the book.
Well, I thank you very much for spending the time this morning. Thank you. Again,
thank you,
the title of the book is Sinatra's Century, 100 Notes on the Man and His World by David Lehman. It is published by Harper. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June. I said that's life.
That's life.
And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself laying flat on my face, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
That's life. And I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart won't buy it. But if there's nothing shaking come this here July, I'm gonna roll myself up in a big ball.